Welcome inside 254. Let's close the office door and start the conversation.
So Amanda, I'm going to tell you a story. Mm-hmm. When I was 15, I got a job working at Wendy's near Dorney Park. And now that I'm a 42-year-old, I realize I could have sued the pants off Wendy's restaurants for the sexual harassment that I and several other female coworkers endured under one of the managers that we had. So this manager would touch us inappropriately, not abusively, but, you know, like the touching on the shoulder, the would comment on the way we looked, commented on breasts, would talk about sex, to the point where even in, so let's see, this would have been 1991. Even in 1991, the guy got sacked. And now I look back and realize the district manager like sat us all down and like asked us what we knew. And that was kind of a debriefing. But now I realize they could have gotten in so much trouble. And I can name other examples of sexual harassment in my workplaces, but that's the one that I think about. I think of that young woman who was being initiated into what the workplace was and just thinking, oh, this is, I guess, what the workplace is.
Mm-hmm. That's terrible. So my story is, I'll tell you, I'll trade stories with you.
Yeah.
So good. I think my story might actually skirt up against assault, but it wasn't like in a back alley kind of a thing. It was, so I think of it as sexual harassment. So you tell me if I'm wrong. I was, oh gosh, I must have been 19 or 20 because I started working full time out of high school, and I put myself through school at night for my bachelor's. So I was taking classes at nights and on weekends, but I was working full time. I was working at maybe I was 21, 22. Okay, a little bit later. I was working as a media buyer at a small advertising agency in downtown Pittsburgh. And one of my jobs as a media buyer was to go to these events. That's part of the work, is to sort of schmooze and hobnob with clients and with industry people from radio and TV stations, because I was putting the buys together for the client on the agency side. And then I was working with the representatives, the salespeople at the radio stations or the TV stations, the billboard company, and negotiating prices to basically put our clients' ads onto TV and onto, so I was buying the airspace. So I would go to a lot of events. This one event, man, I can't tell you, I still feel like I can feel my stomach like, yep, tightening. And that feeling of fear and shame, strange combination. I had just gotten there. I got there. It was a dimly lit sort of bar club area. Lots of industry people were there. And I went and I got myself a drink, and I was standing at a railing sort of overlooking the central area where people were milling about. And I had my drink in my hand, and I felt someone come up behind me, and I had on a mini skirt. I mean, it was a professional, but it was probably like halfway down my thighs, and like a nice top because I had just come from work. And I felt someone come up behind me and push against me. And all I could feel was a hot, warm body behind me pushing against my entire back. And I could feel it was a man because I could feel his hard penis, yeah, against my butt.
Yeah.
And I just froze.
Yep.
And I remember he said something to me in my ear, and I know I said something back, like, you know, something to get myself away. I put my drink down and I actually left. I sat in my car. I was just shaking, and I was like, because I was so young, I didn't know how really to respond other than I had to get out of there, because I could feel that instinctively that was bad. It was wrong. It scared me, and I just left. Like, I didn't tell anybody. I never told my boss. In fact, if my old boss is actually listening to this at all, she's going to be very surprised to hear this. Like, I had a woman boss. She was amazing. None of my coworkers knew. In fact, I haven't really told anybody about this. It's something that, right, this is sort of symptomatic, I think, of this kind of attack, is that there's this shame built in where you're afraid to say something because I was wearing a mini skirt. I had makeup on. My hair was done nice. You know, I have blonde hair and blue eyes and big boobs, and I had nice legs. I had like heels on. I was dressed like a young professional, but something must have caught, right? So you that internalized that blame, and it's has stayed with me. Like, and I'm 46 and I can still feel it as I'm retelling it. I can still feel that feeling. So I have a lot of
well, thank you for telling us that.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings for
and I would say that's assault.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, as I'm telling you, I think that starts into that's assault more.
That's like sexual harassment, workplace stuff. And then that definitely escalated even into sexual assault, for
so
sure.
So I think it's worthwhile that we talk about this, that we tell our own stories, but we also talk about some of these cases that we see coming up. Very high profile stuff, because you and I are not really, especially at the time we're telling these stories, we weren't high profile people. We're just, you know, young women working jobs, you know, kid working job. But these things happen all the time, all the time. And to women in non-high profile positions, but we see a lot of it in the news, especially as of late. We see all these stories, these high profile men and women being accused of sexual assault or sexual harassment, or being either the accuser or the victim. And, you know, that's playing out in headlines and in very public ways. I'm actually wondering, I know we both have different, like we have some questions about this, but I'm really wondering if the sharing of these stories, if the public nature of some of these issues that are going on in the public, these fights between accused and victims, will help more women come forward in their own regular situations. And I don't know that I have an answer to that. I would like to think so, but I don't know. So that's what I've been kind of thinking
about.
Well,
we could think, I mean, there's two ways to look at this. I do not believe this part, but so I'm going to say this first, is that I could believe that somebody might look at somebody like Gretchen Carlson and say, oh, well, if it can happen to her, it can totally happen to me. Because I think the lesson we were all supposed to learn from Anita Hill was, don't you dare ever open your mouth. And so I would hope that maybe Gretchen Carlson's story or somebody else within the Roger Ailes circle or the Bill O'Reilly circle, if that would empower them in their own workplaces. I think if the perpetrator is the same exact perpetrator, it seems to embolden women to feel like they can come forward with their story.
Like a so Me Too effect.
Right. So that's the why person. The Bill Cosby number, and again, sexual harassment and sexual assault are not the same thing. Right. And two Bill Cosby things. Is accused of sexual assault. But we're talking more about these kind of larger structural issues of when men have all this power, you know, what does it mean? So the number for Bill Cosby is up to 58, right? 58 women have now come forward and said, he drugged me, I woke up, I had been sexually assaulted. And I'm looking at a picture of them now all together, and it's heartbreaking to see all their faces. So there is something empowering if I think the perpetrator is the same. I almost think that because we have internalized that idea that it must be our fault, or I got something out of it, like the quid pro quo thing, which is a big part of sexual harassment. Oh, well, oh God, did I get my raise because of that? Mm-hmm. And now if I say something, does that mean everybody's going to look at me differently? So there's a lot that's confusing and blurry and gray in sexual harassment situations in the workplace. So I want to believe that women will come forward more. I have not seen women. I mean, our president is denouncing these women. Yeah. Our president is also accused of these things and is denouncing those women, of course. But, mm-hmm. you know, what does it mean when we watch over and over again women not be believed? So mm-hmm. I think that internalizes a lesson of just keep your mouth shut. This is what is to be expected.
Yeah. Just sit back. Just take it. I think it's important to remember that. So there's a long history of the idea. And again, sexual assault is completely different. Sexual harassment. But for sexual harassment, there's been a long history in our country. And I found a really good article on Time, Time Magazine online, talking about the brief history of sexual harassment in America before Anita
Just
Hill.
Just seeing that picture of Anita Hill breaks my
standing,
heart.
Standing, I know.
Breaks my heart.
Yeah, it really does. I actually listened to that testimony live driving to D.C. with a guy I was seeing back at the time. Phew. We actually listened to that on the radio. It was... Yeah. So her testimony, if anybody isn't aware, was against a U.S. Supreme Court. At the time, he was a nominee, Clarence Thomas. He is, of course, now on the court. This was in 1991. And according to this article, it remains perhaps the most famous sexual harassment case in American history. Her situation and then the controversy that came about did draw national attention to the issue of sexual harassment, but the problem is not new. And this article starts talking about during the 19th, 18th, and 19th century, sexual coercion was a fact of life for female slaves in the South, as well as a common experience among free domestic workers in the North. Early 20th century, women employed in manufacturing and clerical positions had physical and verbal assaults from male supervisors, very common. Union leadership was usually successful in enacting protective legislation that shielded women from performing physically demanding labor, but not from the propositions of their lecherous bosses. And then by the 20s, working women were simply advised to quit their jobs if they couldn't handle the inevitable sexual advances. So
that's frustrating, right? And I think that's like, well, if you want to be in the big game, you need to run with the big boys.
And we're still, and the thing that, exactly, it's frustrating because we still hear that messaging today.
Right.
And this was in, and the, that's 20s. In the 20s. So then in the 70s, there was a turning point. The Women's Liberation Movement challenged the justice system as well as our culture at large that failed to recognize the idea of women's consent. And so the phrase sexual harassment was coined in 1975 by a group of women at Cornell University. And there
was actually
a lawsuit that came
about from that.
Yeah. A 1976 survey by Redbook showed that 80% of respondents had encountered sexual harassment on the job.
Oh my God.
80%. In 1976. Hollywood addressed the issue, remember 9 to 5 with Jane Fonda,
yeah,
Lily Tomlin,
Dolly Parton.
I love that movie. They exact revenge on their sexist boss. This idea of greater awareness, it did also have greater pushback. We're also seeing that today in a whole lot of different things. The anti-feminist crusader Phyllis Schlafly, thank you, believed these women
anti-ERA.
Were, yes, at a Senate committee called to review federal guidelines on harassment, Schlafly testified that virtuous women are seldom accosted. So again, we get, and this was in the, this was in,
just
the,
think about right, that
the
for
80s.
A second,
yes.
Listener.
Yes.
That only non-virtuous women deserve it. And they right. deserve it.
Right.
Think about what's implicit in her language.
So by 1977, three court cases confirmed that a woman could sue her employment for harassment under Title VII of the 64 Civil Rights Act using the EEOC as the vehicle for redress. So only in 1977. I was 7 years old at the time.
I was three.
So within our lifetimes.
Oh, yeah.
Women have...
Absolutely.
Within our lifetimes, yeah. Women have gained the right to sue employers for harassment.
Right after they got credit cards.
Right. Since 1991 and the Thomas hearing, the issues continue to evolve. In 1998, the Supreme Court ruled that same-sex harassment was also unlawful at work. So not until 1998 was same-sex harassment considered unlawful. That's sort of a very, very quick... There's probably whole books on this,
but
that's like a very brief sort of history. Sexual harassment has been with us for a really long time. And it isn't just the powerful. It's the everyday. It's women in all workplaces, working in Wendy's, working in an ad agency, working at the
White Building at Penn State.
At the, right, at Penn State. I mean, working unassuming lives, doing their job, going to work, and then you end up encountering this. It takes you by surprise. You never expect it. It comes out of nowhere. And I really hate the fact that we end up questioning ourselves and wondering what it is that we did. That is a societal message that's been with us for so freaking long. Like the history is, and I wonder how it's going to change. So this idea of, you know, Gretchen Carlson and Roger Ailes and
the women with Bill O'Reilly,
the women assaulted by Bill Cosby. Are these cases that are really high profile, are they going to help more women maybe see themselves and say, I can come forward too? Or is this sort of like a compartmentalized other world where we look at these women and these men who are high profile celebrities or politicians or spokespeople or talking heads and we say, well, that's them. That doesn't have anything to do with me. If I speak up, right? This is what the messaging we get. If I speak up, I have more to lose than they do, right? Is there a separation or do we feel inspired by seeing that and having it be public and out there and having these men get sued and the women successfully suing them and the men lose their jobs? Real, real tangible consequences. I don't know. I just don't know the answer to that.
I don't think it changes me watching it. I don't, in workplaces throughout my whole life, there have been those moments where I'm like, so that was sexual harassment. And I just move on. So,
I've never made a sexual harassment claim.
But I have been part of them because communities of women have known, and then I've gotten phone calls to be interviewed, but I've never been the person who sought out a claim, but I have been part of investigations in the past because I've been at, just like Anita Hill, right? Like her friends knew. Mm-hmm. And then when he was called into question, she was sought out. Like a similar situation has happened with me. And I mean, not a I'm not Anita Hill, but like I've never gone to someone and said, I would like to file a claim of sexual harassment.
Yeah.
So, and because it's blurry, right? Like in that.
Is this progress?
I feel like this is a place where we're not making progress. I feel like this is a place where I had a professor at Lehigh. This guy like totally was awful so I could get my parking permit and like took me into this secluded room and it was really unprofessional. And I'm telling this professor and I was and at the end of it, I was like, I got my parking permit. That's all I really care about. And she's like, are you out of your mind? And I'm like, I don't care. I like just don't care. And now I do because, of course, like I don't want this to happen to other women. But unless you have that, like, I think a lot of women just want to move on with their day. Like, okay, fine. You are disgusting. And I need to earn my paycheck. I mean, what are you going to do? You have to work. What if it's just, it's so inextricably linked to the marketplace and to women's livelihood. And so many women are responsible now for the financial health of their families. Like, there's so much to risk. That I can see why women are not reporting this.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean it's not happening. So
it's happening all the time.
It's happening all the time. And that's the thing. We want to hold people who harass and who assault and who abuse accountable.
We just rewarded one by giving him a presidency.
Right.
We gave Bill O'Reilly money.
$25 million, right?
I mean, like, come on.
That's the thing.
We want to hold them accountable.
No. And that's where I kind of question, like, so part of me wants to say it's on us, like each individual woman. If there's something that happens, you need to just not walk away. But I think we've all done it. So what?
And I don't blame anybody who does.
No, but doesn't that also mean that we're implicated in the fact that
here's what that means.
Yeah,
that men need to stop harassing women in the workplace.
Yeah.
That's what it means, right? Like, you know,
but there have to be consequences for them to see that they need to stop, right? Because they're
on
not
on whose back, right? Look what happened to Anita Hill,
right? And that's the thing: the men who harass and who assault are not going to stop unless there's a consequence, and they know that there will be a serious consequence to them doing this heinous behavior. But they, because not enough of us want to step up and say something, they just keep going on doing what they're doing. That guy who walked into my back, he's been doing that his whole life.
Right.
He's doing it again and again. Maybe something worse.
Right. And that guy that I just described at Wendy's, he got a job at Friendly's down the street. Like it wasn't like he just left the earth.
Right. No consequence. So again, whose responsibility is it? Is it ours? Is it just men are just supposed to know and behave better? Because again, it gets back to messaging. The messages, what we see in the media, actions, our own families that we see, fathers, mothers, brothers, sisters, people in our neighborhoods, friends, the people that behave around you when you see it when you're young, you're going to probably take some of that on.
Of course.
I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but how does a man know not to sexually harass someone? I can imagine my husband's face if I said
that. No, but I was actually just thinking.
Of course we know better. I'm like, but some of you don't. So why don't you know?
I think it takes a pretty, self-aware man to not.
Yeah.
And I don't like saying that. But I think that's why your husband and my partner would be like, I know better, but I think it.
But why do they know better? And I would say to mine, well, it's because you grew up in a family where you'd probably get hurt if you did. Like, that is completely unacceptable because it's this paternalistic caring for women thing. But it was a basic respect and a treatment thing.
Right.
So even that sort of paternalistic, you know, domineering attitude in a family still had its rules. And the rules were you don't hurt women. Right. So that message got across. So the men who grew up maybe with that messaging and do it anyway, I mean, really, It's about power. It's about control.
I was just going to say that. It's about power. If there were more equity in power structures and who has those jobs,
especially
it might
in the
be
workplace.
Different in the workplace.
Yeah.
But until that happens, I think it's a lot to ask women to disrupt sexual harassment.
I mean, even as I was saying that, I'm thinking, but, you know, I've done it.
Me too. I mean, like, just move on. I don't have time for this. Right?
It's like I care more about, and it's terrible because I care more about the preservation of my career, the preservation of my life, the preservation. I'm thinking, but I'm just giving this guy a pass to do it again to some other woman. I did that. Like, I'm the one that decided. So it makes me very uncomfortable.
Well, okay, so here's a good reminder of something that you're supposed to do is keep really good documents.
Yeah.
So even if you're not the person who goes forward, if there is somebody else who does decide to go forward, you can be a good ally and then you can participate. So that's a good reminder that even if you feel like you're not ready to report, you can keep good records. That's like the best thing you can do if you feel like you're being sexually harassed at work. So that if, like that instance where then it was kind of like a bunch of people came forward about this person at another place, then I was able to add my story and my story sounded very similar. If you can do that, you are undoing and chipping away the climate where sexual harassment could breed.
And I will say there is great value. I'm thinking again about Gretchen Carlson, about Anita Hill. There's great value in being the very courageous first to come out and say
something.
I'm
grateful to those people.
I am so grateful.
I'm so grateful to them.
And that's, I want to encourage women, if you're in that situation, think about being the courageous first, right? Think about it.
I just want women to be safe.
I want women to be safe too,
but
right? But that's, it is, I think it's important to
it
have
is.
The courageous
if
firsts.
If you can be those courageous firsts.
And if it's not you, but maybe something happened to you, tell a friend. Tell somebody. Don't be like me and just hold on to this for, you know, 30 years. Tell someone in the moment or do something. But just be safe. Say something. And support the women who do
speak up. Well, that's the big thing.
Support.
That's the big thing.
If you do have a friend who says something, believe her. Support her in her decision. Encourage her to say something, you know, but in the end, just be safe.
And that it's okay to make that choice.
It's okay to make that choice. It's a tough subject.
Something that we all need to keep talking about.
We do need to keep. So I'm glad we did this episode. We need to keep talking about it.
Yes, we do.
Thanks for listening.
Of course. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Time for Trumpster Fire. So, Colleen, we need to talk about these high-profile sexual harassment suits, and specifically Bill O'Reilly.
I was going to say, which one?
Well,
so many to choose from.
Bill O'Reilly, and then I want to actually bring in Roger Ailes, but I know you have something to say about Bill O'Reilly, so please,
we need to talk about this. We do, because Bill O'Reilly finally fell, and this is what Donald Trump said publicly, very publicly about this. Personally, I think he shouldn't have settled because you should have taken it all the way. I don't think Bill did anything wrong. I think he's a person I know well. He is a good person. So that was Donald Trump talking about this person who he thinks is a good person and how problematic that is. First of all, a good person can sexually harass somebody. I think we all need to get away from this now. I don't like that person, but somebody who looks outwardly like a good person is also, that's how abuse and harassment works.
That's right.
We need to stop talking about harassment or rape or anything like that as like the stranger in the dark alley. These things are happening in our workplaces, in our domestic spaces. And so because Donald Trump thinks Bill O'Reilly is a good person, doesn't matter. I'm going to be honest, Donald Trump. I give two shits what you think about Bill O'Reilly's character, because there is a list of women, high profile women, who have risked their careers to say they were harassed, that they were taunted. And so I don't need Donald Trump and his opinions on this.
There seems to be this, I don't know if I'm going out on a limb.
She's making faces here. What? Say it.
I think a lot of us do this. I think what Trump is doing, what he seems to be doing, I think, is something a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And that's compartmentalizing the harassment or ignoring it and in favor of that person's more noble qualities.
Right.
So I think that begs the question, and I'm going to go with the gendered here. Do men who sexually harass women have nobler qualities? Is it ever possible or preferable to separate a man's illegal actions from the rest of his actions? Is it right? Is it moral? Is it ethical? Are women afforded this luxury? And before you answer that, I just want to point out, because I think it's important to put things like comments that, like Trump said about Bill O'Reilly, side by side with his comments about Roger Ailes, who was the chairman and CEO of Fox News, who last year resigned his position because...
Under duress.
Under duress, because Gretchen Carlson, who has won her lawsuit against him for this...
And who's Trump? No dummy.
No, she's not.
And
no,
she is no dummy.
She is
highly educated, smart. I mean, yes. I know the show didn't give her space to show that, but she's not an idiot.
So Trump called Ailes, quote, a great guy. Is this sounding familiar?
Oh, God.
Lauded him for his achievements in media. This is Trump speaking. What he's done on television, in the history of television, he's got to be placed in the top 3 or 4 or 5, Trump said, adding that his resignation is too bad. Then he says,
too bad? Harassing a bunch of women.
Yeah. And this is as much a problem as everything Trump says is this really got to me. He said, some of the women that are complaining, I know how much he's helped them. He said, now all of a sudden, they're saying these horrible things about him. It's very sad because he's a very good person. It's the same thing he said about Bill O'Reilly. And again, he's defending someone. He's defending this man. Is this the code of manhood where you protect your brother no matter what heinous behavior? Is it about the... So again, back to my question. What is this urge that some people have? And I'm going to say people because I think women can do it too. But in this case, it's Trump. What is this impulse to separate, to compartmentalize the harassment? Is that moral? Is it ethical? I mean, for Trump, does it matter? Is it right to compartmentalize sexual harassment out away from the fact that maybe he helped these women in other ways, but then sexually harassed them on the side? For me, I hate to use this word in this way, but it's true. I think that sexual harassment trumps every good thing that man did.
Mm.
It trumps everything because it diminishes and weakens any noble gesture, and it was meaningless. Maybe he made those noble gestures to get in their skirts.
I guarantee. I don't think it was noble gestures.
Right? So he wasn't doing it out of the goodness of his heart, and I think that's the implication.
That's the basis of quid pro quo.
When Trump tries to compartmentalize and separate them out, I think what he's saying is, well, he did these good things, so that trumps his bad behavior. No, I think it's the other way around. I think the bad behavior trumps any good thing he ever did.
Well, and both also, of them, but maybe Donald Trump just really thinks they're good people, even if they did those things.
Well, because he's a sexual harasser in chief. He thinks it's okay to grab women by the pussy. He thinks it's okay to just talk about women and treat women however he wants. So, of course, he agrees with these sexual abusers what he does.
Not only does he agree with them, he talks about all three of them in the same category as if they're being victimized.
Right.
Somehow I'm supposed to believe that Roger Ailes, Bill O'Reilly, and Donald Trump are the victims.
Right.
And that powerful reappropriation on their part of the idea of victimhood and what that does to the agency of the women who actually are victims. Mm-hmm. So I don't need to hear Donald Trump's opinion on any more sexual harassment cases, because frankly, what he has to say is null and void based on his conversation with Billy Bush.
Right.
And that one got caught on tape. So don't for a second believe there aren't 100 more just like that.
Or more.
Yeah.
Those conversations in his world are happening all the time.
Yeah.
I promise you.
Yeah.
So yeah, his comments
on
this subject.
His whole world is the locker room.
Yeah, his whole world is the locker room. His comments on this subject of someone like Bill O'Reilly and his behavior and he's the victim. It's completely illegitimate.
He should just keep his mouth shut.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know how to do that either.
Like what you're hearing? Hey Podbean listeners, see that green Become a Patron button at the top right of your screen? You can click on that, donate a dollar a month, and get a cool sticker, a Facebook shout-out, and our undying gratitude. iTunes listeners, we didn't forget about you. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll see a blue Shop Now button. Click that button, and it'll get you to that same site. Thanks for keeping us sustainable.
Let's take a time out for a media minute.
Susan Bordeaux's book, The Destruction of Hillary Clinton, asks the same question I still ask myself. How did someone so qualified lose to someone so not qualified to be president? Bordeaux's book must have been written in a tear to be on the shelves so quickly, and I share her urgency. Starting with an exhaustive list of Clinton's accomplishments and successes, the book moves to explain that Hillary was not a bad candidate, but instead she was swept away in a perfect storm of bad and untrue media, narratives, and negative campaigning. Bordeaux's methodical look at the news and reportage of the campaign had me yelling in my car a few times as I listened to the audiobook. Most times I just felt sad that someone so accomplished could be hijacked by Bordeaux's top three candidates for the ruination of the campaign in the order of importance, James Comey, Anthony Weiner, and Bernie Sanders, whom she argues did not endorse Hillary quickly enough as she had done when she lost the primary to Obama. If James Comey feels, quote, slightly nauseous for turning the election, reading Bordeaux's book will make him positively hurl for weeks to see her systematic look at how his, if not illegal, at least unprecedented insertion of himself into the political landscape favored Donald Trump. The destruction of Hillary Clinton helped me get beyond my pat answer of misogyny when trying to work through her loss. Bordeaux shows it was misogyny coupled with the confluence of forces working against Hillary that destroyed her political campaign for president.
Let's end today's podcast with some activist actions. Today's activist actions involve three fairly simple suggestions. Number one, listen to a friend or a coworker when she tells you that she was sexually harassed or assaulted. Believe her. Two, learn to recognize sexual harassment at work for yourself and for your friends and your coworkers who may share their stories with you. And three, which may actually help with recognizing, if you're not sure what sexual harassment in the workplace looks like, David Schwimmer produced a short film series depicting what sexual harassment really looks like, especially in the workplace. It's called That's Harassment. And if you type in That's Harassment into YouTube, all six videos will come up. They're 5 minutes or less, directed by David's friend and Israeli-American director, Sigal Avin, and each one represents a fairly common situation where a man in a position of some power crosses the line of sexual harassment in different ways. The shorts are titled The Doctor, The Actor, The Boss, The Coworker, The Photographer, and The Politician. When I watched them, I felt extremely uncomfortable, and you will too. But here's the thing. I want you to feel uncomfortable. I want you to watch these. I want you to share them with your friends. And I want you to share these with the men in your lives. And I want all of us to be more aware of what sexual harassment really looks like so that maybe we can work together to stop it. Listen, learn, watch, and believe.
Thanks for spending time with us inside 254. You can find us a lot of places online. You can follow us on Facebook at Inside254Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Inside254Pod. Instagram, we're at Inside254. And we're online, where we put links and more information from each episode at Inside254site.wordpress.com. You can follow us on Podbean, and please rate us on iTunes. Thanks for spending time with us this episode of Inside 254.